This is John Davison, and you're listening to Yes Music Podcast.
Welcome to episode 34 of the Yes Music Podcast, one fan's exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. I'm your host, Kevin Mulrine. Please remember how you can get involved on the site www.yesmusicpodcast.com, where you can subscribe via RSS, via iTunes, via email to the blog posts and episode updates. You can read and then comment on show notes or blog posts. You can follow the show on Twitter at Yes Music Podcast. You can send an email to show@yesmusicpodcast.com. You can upload a file via the link on the right-hand side, or leave a voice message and appear on the show yourself in two ways, either by calling 0844 579 6949 using the mailbox number 39417, or by recording a voice message straight onto the website using the record a message button on the extreme right-hand side. If you have a smartphone, you can download the free Stitcher.com app and listen that way. This week I've been chatting to listeners via Twitter and via comments on the website about Yes songs and last week's episode. At Video Tim on Twitter said, "What I love about Yes songs is how the sheer exuberance of exploring what were then new musical territories comes over." I agree, Tim. You can hear that on every track. Paul Tomei commented on the show notes, "Great job, Kevin. It brings me back to when I bought that live album. Took it home and I remember just playing it over and over. I think I bought all Yes albums at least two times, and some I bought three times. I remember when the movie came out, it was the first time I actually had the chance to see them live. I don't remember the exact year, but it was just the most wonderful thing I'd ever experienced in my young life. I do remember that they did change the order, and I'm sure it was all Alan, but it was so many years ago I could be wrong. Very possible I'm wrong, it was the 70s. I look forward to next week for part two, and I always look forward to the next podcast. Keep up the great work, it matters." Many thanks. As usual, Paul, we can see your dedication to the Yes cause. Russell Whitworth added a great Yes-related anecdote. He said, "A footnote regarding the Firebird Suite. Before I started listening to classical music, I was only familiar with this piece thanks to Yes songs, so I assumed incorrectly that it was written as an introduction. I only discovered my error when I was visiting an art gallery, and the piece was being played over the speakers. I waited in eager anticipation to find out what would follow, instead of Siberian Katru, and of course it led to disappointing silence. I now have plenty of Stravinsky in my music collection, but I still find it hard to hear this piece as a conclusion." Thanks for that, Russell. He also, like Paul, mentioned the film of Yes songs, and I will get round to looking at that one of these days. Finally this week, Paul Wilson added this kind comment. "Excellent episode, Kevin, and lovely to hear that you are on to the live albums. I think I play the live tracks more often than the equivalent studio tracks. There is just something about the atmosphere with such great musicians playing together with an edge, well, close to the edge, that you just don't get from the perfection of studio overdubs. P.S. I agree with Russell. That part of Firebird Suite really needs Siberian Katru, Yes songs, or Parallels, Yes shows, or Yours Is No Disgrace, Union Live and House of Yes to follow it. I get goosebumps every time." As always, thanks so much for your comment, Paul. Hopefully those goosebumps will be provoked again by listening to this episode. Or perhaps not. Please keep listening at the end of the episode as I'll be introducing the first Yes Music Podcast competition. How exciting is that? Anyway, on to the second disc of Yes songs. The first track on Volume 2, Side 1 is Mood for a Day. Clearly this is meant to give the listener a sense of attending a real concert, with Steve Howe giving the rest of the band and perhaps the audience a well-earned break after the excess of And You and I. The sound is remarkably full with great bass on this recording. There is a surprising amount of crowd noise, though. Are they not content to have the greatest rock guitarist of all time playing right in front of them? Anyway, this is a great recording of a great performance, taken at quite a lick by Howe. There is all the contrast you'd expect, and the sound washes over you in a most delicious and satisfying way. Next up is a track I really don't know that well at all. It's Rick Wakeman's solo, Excerpts from the Six Wives of Henry VIII. There is a tiny but very atmospheric introduction by John Anderson, initially singing a fragment of a wordless melody and then introducing Wakeman by name. As with a lot of Wakeman's solo work I've heard, there are a lot of notes here. He starts with a synthesized harpsichord-type sound, and there's more than a touch of J.S. Bach in the elaborate, swiftly moving mix. This is not really a surprise, considering Wakeman's classical background. He then moves via a wash of typical synth sound into a section on piano, which highlights his sheer virtuosity. He sweeps up and down the keyboard in the fastest runs I've heard any rock keyboard player attempt. It's absolutely breathtaking. Next, we have an example of Wakeman's sense of humour. He plays silent movie Keystone Cops music and manages to make the piano sound like a genuine cinema instrument from the 1930s. It's very, very silly and very, very funny in the midst of the virtuosic grandeur of the other sections. A masterstroke of juxtaposition. There is another elaborate piano section, and then Handel's Hallelujah Chorus is added in, played on what appears to be a selection of different keyboards simultaneously. The technical difficulty of even getting all these early 70s instruments to function at the same time, let alone sound anything approaching harmonious, strikes me as one of the most remarkable achievements of rock music. As on the record, I believe, the other members of the band join in at various points. For example, Alan White adds drums to the Hallelujah section. The following section is the creative keyboard genius at play, with an astounding set of textures, including swooping and fast-fingered solos set against walls of sound. Wakeman was a true pioneer of electronic music, and this passage must have been both state-of-the-art and mind-blowing for the audience. There's even a police siren in there at the end, hopefully not coming to take Wakeman away. His keyboard slows in pace and tone and grinds to a halt. Now, I want to be very careful in phrasing my reaction to this track. I appreciate the technical wizardry, the musicianship, the humour and the virtuosity which went into producing it. I believe there was nothing to touch it at the time, or perhaps since. However, personally, the passages where classical music is reinterpreted do not really work for me. It's not the early electronic instruments, it's certainly not the way Wakeman arranges or performs, I just don't really like classical music on rock instruments, which is why I've never really understood the whole ELP idea. Also, I think the comedy moments work brilliantly, but seem very incongruous. I'd prefer Rick to play a straight solo, and then as an encore perhaps launch into some of the other things. However, if you think otherwise, that's absolutely fine. Please let me know why I'm wrong. After that slightly surreal interlude, we're back to Yes Music with a vengeance. Roundabout has become, quite rightly, one of the most important Yes songs, recorded and live. It's interesting to consider that here we have the band playing it on tour for the very first time. It's such an integral part of the Yes landscape now that it's hard to imagine what it must have been like to be present at a gig and hear this for the very first time live. I know some of you listening to the podcast were indeed there in 1973. Please let us know what it was like. Did you have any idea how seminal this work was going to become? The opening of the track is noticeably heavier than the original studio recording, but this is not principally down to Alan White's drumming. It's actually more to do with the way Steve Howe reinterprets the lead guitar part. He's clearly having an absolute ball, and Chris Squire joins in, as you'd expect, with a much more strident feel than on the original record. There isn't a lot of Rick Wakeman towards the beginning of the song, but his lines are always perfectly suited to the piece, and added with a strained panache. It's a joyful performance, full of energy, and a real sense of fun. I love Wakeman's choices of different synth voices, around 3 minutes 40 seconds, and each change of mood is handled in typically imperious fashion. There's no sense of the possibility of the music flying off the tracks, but this does nothing to diminish the excitement. The fast passages are still a white-knuckle ride of pure prog excess. I'm really not sure how they do it, but when they get to the Mountains Come Out of the Lake section, around 5 minutes 40 seconds, you just know they are building up to something huge, even though the mood is held back. It's another occasion where the combined talent of the band creates a collective moment of pure harmonious genius. And the something huge in this case is the Wakeman-Howe solo battle. I can't describe the feeling this evokes, you'll just have to go and listen. What a sequence. A full band recap is followed by the wordless choral section complete with elaborate drumming patterns beneath, and then the triumphant end takes the breath away once again. If you had to choose just one track to play to your friends, maybe this is it. It encapsulates everything you'd want to convey about the live classic band. A bewildering display of virtuosity, synchronicity and joy. Quintessential Yes. Can there be any more highlights? Let's turn this volume over to side two and see. I must say I'm rather puzzled to see the Sleeve Notes track listing as Your Move, followed by I've Seen All Good People. Your Move is the first movement of I've Seen All Good People, surely. Maybe the person writing the Sleeve Notes got confused with Part B being named All Good People. Anyway, the piece begins, as you'd expect, with the fabulous Yes Choir introduction, and then Howe's remarkable, unique Portuguese guitar sound. The mood is one of peace, love, and bliss. Close your eyes and it's easy to lose yourself in the music. It goes without saying that the vocals are beautifully crafted. Wakeman also does a decent job of recreating the recorder consort on keyboard. At about 3 minutes, the louder section starts, and it's interesting to note that this has become more rocky and insistent in more recent live situations. Here it's more laid back and reflects the original studio version more closely. I like both interpretations. It's a bit of a surprise to hear a stereo phase effect when the band enter the rock and roll section. I wonder if that was added in post-production. This is definitely one of the sections in which I think Alan White improves on the original recording, at least for the live arena. Bill Bruford's style has never been particularly suited to laying down a big fat rock groove, and this is exactly what White manages here. He underpins the music and gives it the stability it needs to avoid racing off into oblivion. It's as close as the band managed to get to a danceable passage, and it benefits greatly from the master of rhythm holding it together. White therefore allows Howe the space to solo above, and he produces some of the best guitar work I've ever heard. I absolutely defy you to listen to this, and not to smile and tap your foot. While not the originators of the technique, the band are absolute masters of stripping the orchestration down to just vocals and drums, and it's this section which is elaborated in later years into a chance for the instrumentalists to play a short solo fragment, introduced by Anderson. Here we have just a tiny bit of Howe, and an even tinier bit of Squire before White leads the way into the finale of the track. But it's great to hear the origins of this playful segment and the way in which the band created a definite end to the song rather than trying to play the fade-out from the studio recording live. Next up is Long Distance Runaround, and this starts in an unusual way. Rick Wakeman begins with a slightly odd version of the theme and is joined by Steve Howe to repeat it. I had to go back to the studio version to make sure I wasn't imagining things, and sure enough the record has the two musicians starting together, which I actually think works better. However, as soon as Bruford and Squire join in, the bouncy feel is established, and it's time to sit back and enjoy the syncopation, rhythmic complexity and pure fun of the piece. Bruford is true to his original drum part, which is definitely in a rather different style to the Alan White numbers, and it all rolls along with perfect unison playing between Squire and Howe until the reprise of the main riff between Howe and Wakeman. During this passage, I nearly jumped out of my skin. Steve Howe does something really bizarre in his line. I think it sticks out to me so much because I've listened to the studio recording so many times. Howe embellishes the usual line, which alters the original flow. As I listen a few more times, I'm getting used to it, but it was quite a shock at first. The quiet section from around 3 minutes 25 seconds is used by Howe for a spot of improvised sounding soloing, which is a kind of brief interlude before the riff for the next section is set up and Squire starts to improvise himself. This is another of those passages which can only be carried off by musicians of serious talent. There's nowhere to hide. The instruments are all exposed to the viewing and listening public. Of course, there's no cause for concern, as Squire's soloing is an absolute wonder to behold. The unique sound, the freedom of expression, the ability to range around the whole instrument whilst still within the confines of the piece's basic tonality and feel, these are just some of the components which go to make up this supreme sequence. At around 7 minutes, Bruford's drumming is at its understated but perfectly balanced best as he weaves through the texture. Chris Squire then takes us into The Fish. It's a solo at mesmerising speed. Please tell me if you have ever heard another bass guitarist approach this level of brilliance in lead bass playing. The contrasts in volume, the dexterity, the feel. If you haven't heard this solo, then go and hear it right now. Surely this is Chris Squire's legacy moment. It can't get any better than this, unless you know differently. There are foreshadowings of the sound and technique of players like Sting, touches of rock and roll and heaps of amazing playing, combining with Bill Bruford, whose remarkable jazz-influenced technique is shown off to marvellous effect. This is a vastly expanded and elaborated version of the piece from the record, and when the vocals finally appear, you realise you have been a stunned witness of one of the greatest sequences in all of progressive rock, and all of popular music. Well, I've managed to make it through two of the three discs of Yes Songs relatively unscathed, As I said on Twitter this week, every single full band track seems better than the last. Surely the quality dips on the last volume. We shall see. So that's about it for this week. I'll finish my exploration of Yes songs next week. Before I go, however, as I mentioned earlier, I'm in the process of planning the first Yes Music Podcast competition. Before you get carried away, the reward is going to be mainly the taking part, unless I can persuade someone to offer a great Yes-related prize. You never know what the Yes publicity machine might be able to offer, but don't hold your breath. So in the next couple of weeks, I'll start publishing a question a day on the website. The person with the most correct answers at the end of the competition will win the probably very small prize. So look out for that. I'll let you know when I'm starting. In the meantime, please get involved by leaving a comment on the blog at www.yesmusicpodcast.com, by sending a tweet or direct message to @yesmusicpodcast on Twitter, by sending an email to show@yesmusicpodcast.com, by uploading an audio file or recording a voice message via the buttons on the site, or finally by leaving a voicemail on 0844 579 6949 using the mailbox number 39417. So until next week, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.